Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the National Coalition of Labor. To my right, Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, what's happening? Go Bears.
Go Bears. A big night for you.
Yes,
Phil Davidson, Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. Excited for tonight's game.
So let me ask you this about tonight's game.
Yes.
Really, this is more for Ed. Yeah. this makes me laugh. So Ed, as many of our listeners know, recently got married.
I
and
did.
His new wife got him a birthday present because it was his birthday last week. And you know what the birthday present was? Bears tickets.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. For tonight's game.
Outstanding.
Yes.
On the secondary market?
She the best. She did.
That was a pretty penny.
You know, yeah, she's no like question the about Jurassic it. Park guys.
But yeah, you know what the best thing about it is? Ed has to sit outside in 0 degree weather.
That is 100% true.
I can't wait. Are you going to be the guy that takes off your shirt?
No, I'm going to be the guy who bought Fat Man snow pants to nice. Keep the wind from getting in.
So you're actually going to go?
Well, how do you not go?
Because it's cold out.
I don't care. The Bears. There's
man.
No better city to be in the world than Chicago when the Bears are winning.
Oof.
I think he's right.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, the bars lately during the Bears playoff games have been rocking.
There's no question
They've
about that.
Rocking.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Last weekend, I was at my daughter's volleyball tournament, and there's hundreds of parents there, and half of them are wearing Bears hoodies or whatever.
Yeah.
I had 50 people just say to me, "Go Bears," as we walk by. Like, it's everybody just saying it. It's great. It's feels like a community.
Well, okay. I mean,
nobody's saying go Giants.
No.
What up with those G-men?
They're a team. Yeah.
Cool. They are still a team.
They're a team.
Listen, I am rooting for the Bears because it's good for the city, and it's good for work, and it's good for the restaurants and the bars, et cetera. So
true.
Go Bears. You know, pains me to say it, but go Bears.
Shouldn't pain you.
So anyway, we got a show today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. There's nurses strikes going on, and there's just a ton of stuff. But we have, I think, what we talked about, or what you talked about, Phil, on Worker Wednesday. We have somebody coming in from your union to talk about mental health in the trades and
yes.
suicide rates and things like that. You know, it's interesting. The I don't even know what was Robert Kennedy Jr., whoever it was, or Trump canceled $2 billion worth of mental health grants for
mental health and addiction grants. Yeah.
For places that provide, you know, this like ridiculously needed benefit.
Right.
And then within, I don't know, 48 hours, they reverse course.
Yeah. That's all comes under DHS. So it was apparently at the direction of RFK Jr.
We know to cancel these grants.
To cancel these grants because, you know, addiction isn't real in his warped mind or whatever he's going through, even though he says he was addicted to heroin. But
right? I mean, let's. That's something enough people I don't think know.
Right.
You're talking about fat and protein. It's just like you're also the guy that really likes heroin.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he went through some very expensive rehab to quit that addiction that he had.
But, probably had a lot of his family members in that same clinic.
Exactly.
Good
so,
one.
But yeah, well, if the government's providing it to places like Haymarket here in Chicago,
yeah.
right.
they said, no, we're going to pull that grant funding. And, you know, to his credit, I will, you know, we sometimes criticize the president, but to this one he said, what are you doing? And he reversed it, I think, like overnight.
Good.
So
Good.
They got their funding back. And thankfully, because, yeah, I mean, that would just.
First of all, $2 billion.
Think of the number of lives that would destroy.
$2 billion. Well, like, he keeps going, like, oh, yeah. I just saved a million lives by, you know, stopping all this fentanyl from coming in here. Well, you can save a trillion lives by dropping $10 billion into, you know, mental health and
Correct.
Drug addiction and things like that. And this is a space that needs way more money and
Correct.
Way more attention.
Yeah, $2 billion is a drop in the bucket.
For it's nothing,
the
right?
The United States government, correct.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a week of Elon Musk's pay.
True. True. Probably it's getting close to that.
Did you see this thing in California? There's a bunch of unions that are pushing to tax any CEO that makes more than 50 times what the worker bees make. And it says it's something like tax corporate greed to pay for the things we need.
I love it.
That's pretty funny, right?
I mean, I think
pretty
it would be
smart.
Almost every CEO.
I think that's every CEO,
50
right?
50 times?
It was something like that. You know, it's like,
and look, that's what the average, I believe, was like back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, now it's 450 times, I think.
Yeah, now it's 450. Some it's 2,000 times
yeah.
the average worker.
Starbucks.
Yeah. And so I just thought it was, you know, I thought it was clever. I don't know if it goes anywhere, but I thought it was a clever way to bring attention to the fact that there is such wage disparity in this country, right? There's the working poor. There's a little tiny sliver of the middle class left. And then there's the 1% that are actually carrying the economy because they're the ones that are spending. Nobody else is spending anything because they can't afford anything.
I think they account for like 50% of spending in the country.
They call it a K-shaped economy. The richer spending. Everybody else can't afford it. Yeah. A million plus people just lost their health insurance, right? Because they couldn't afford to pay after the subsidies went away. And by the way, that still hasn't been resolved.
Right.
And doesn't look like it's going to get resolved.
It's stuck in the Senate right now.
So you're going to continue to see more people lose their health insurance and or have to make that decision between health insurance and food, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a shame for the working class to have to be in that situation while our elected officials get health insurance for life, right? You can serve one term.
And Cadillac plan.
The best of the best.
Yes.
Right? So why can't we have that? Why can't we have Medicare for all? Like, you know, it's just ridiculous that we're, you know, the second richest country in the world next to China.
Yeah, right.
And we can't afford to insure our own people.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So, anyway, we got that. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about some strikes that are going on.
Yep.
Like really important ones and
teachers,
the ramifications of those and nurses, et cetera. But we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. So, a couple of things going on in the world and some sort of weird positive news. And that, Ed, you had sent me an article about some Republicans breaking ranks with the GOP to kill some anti-union labor bills.
Yeah, there were some bills that were going to be taken up by the House to ease regulations on business and give them a little bit more power over their workers with how you can calculate overtime pay, things like that.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
And six centrist Republicans in the House sided with Democrats and torpedoed this thing. And it was expected to just kind of sail through. But on worker issues, it would appear that there are sort of centrist Republicans, moderate Republicans that are starting to rebel against the institution, you know, the Republican Party, the conservative wing of it, to try to protect and, you know, go back to their worker constituents and say, you know, we're trying to help you here, which is great news. I mean, hopefully this will protect and insulate workers from some of the more extreme things that have been proposed in the House.
I think that's right. And I think that, you know, if that continues, maybe people sort of get back to normal land, and maybe that continues in other areas of the world. Obviously, it didn't continue with the war powers thing, right? They immediately folded once Trump put some pressure on them.
Folded like a beach chair.
Right. But there was one bill in particular which would have affected us in the trades, which was they were going to exempt apprentices from overtime.
Right.
Right? So anybody training doesn't get overtime. Well, guess what? You know, I'm practicing law. Well, I'm still practicing law. I'm still training, you know, whatever. Like, that. You know that people would just be take, or corporations would take such advantage of that, right?
Yeah.
And so they killed it.
And they had three bills that they were going to vote on. And this sort of defection of these centrist Republicans to the Democrat side.
Yeah.
Was so unexpected that it happened on the first vote, and they canceled the other. They scrapped plans for the other, which is, I mean, this is a promising side. I want to find out who these six House members are and send them.
You know what? You're right about that. I will call
Hopefully
them.
Hopefully they're
thank
Davis
you.
Bacon Republicans. As we
I would imagine.
I hope so, yeah. Lunch pail Republicans, as we like to call them. So anyway, so we had that. And then, Ed, you said that there was a first NLRB ruling, right? What happened with that one?
Yeah, so now that there's a quorum, we had speculated last week, like, what's the first thing that they're going to do?
So is this the first ruling in how long?
I guess it would be since, what, January, February?
Yeah.
But
been a full year.
Yeah, out in San Francisco, there was a healthcare company that was unionized by SEIU. Okay. And they, you know, the regional director of the NLRB out there in San Francisco had certified the election, said, okay, this election was lawful.
Yep.
And these folks have, you know, voted for a union. And the healthcare company basically said, there's no quorum in Washington. You cannot certify this election. It's not valid. And so the board came out and issued a decision on this past week, saying that regional directors, when there's no quorum in Washington, can certify elections and can otherwise rule on representational cases.
Good.
So I'm thinking in this case, you know, the healthcare company is free to now appeal it in federal court. And if it wins in federal court, it would negate the union victory in the election. But so it's good news. But I guess it all hinges on who gets appointed as regional director, because
right.
You put in regional directors and then you don't have a quorum, and these regional directors can kind of just do whatever they want.
Right.
And where are you going to challenge it to? You take it to federal court. Details.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, hey, union, I know you got 99 out of 100 votes, but I'm not going to certify the election. I don't think you actually won.
Yeah, this first example is
inconclusive results.
Yeah, the first example here worked well for unions, but I have to think it wouldn't have been done or decided that way if this was a plan to increase union power.
The OJ effect.
Yeah, right.
So, all right. So, anyway, so more to come on that. Phil, there's something going on in Rockford you want to say?
Yeah, this was something, as you know, my wife, sometime correspondent for the show.
Yes.
She works for the Illinois Education Association. And I've seen this on the news now. It's been on local TV and in some of the papers. The Rockford Education Association, which has 2,000 members, is getting close to a strike.
Mm.
Nothing yet, but they're in federal mediation. There are 27,000 students in that district. It's pretty big.
Wow.
Yeah. Bigger than I thought.
Yeah, same.
And they're, they are negotiating and bargaining for retirement. I guess the district wants to do a second tier, which is obviously a no-no and anathema to what they want to see for their members. And then also wages is something they're bargaining over. I guess those teachers are paid at a lower rate than districts of their size and lower than the surrounding communities. Even Belvedere teachers make more. And a few other things that they're bargaining over. But, those obviously teacher strikes make a lot of news because that impacts
it certainly
parents.
Do. Yeah. So they are some of the most effective strikes that there are.
There really
because
are.
The teachers understand the power of that choke point that we talked about,
right?
Kids can't go to school. One parent's got to stay home. Right? That parent can't go to work. Those strikes tend to get over pretty darn quick.
Exactly.
And by the way, who does not have the back of the teachers? Everybody's got the back of the teachers.
Right.
It's just like firefighters and cops. It should be. It's not like that all over the world. But
it changed a little bit in recent years.
Yeah.
But I think it's starting to go back.
I agree with
people.
You.
I think people saw during COVID like, oh my Lord, teachers really actually are.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, speaking of that, Phil, like, so there's a strike going on right now in New York City. Okay.
Okay.
Nurses. And same, right? During COVID, these nurses are the heroes,
right?
First responders, they're there, they're risking their lives, the hospitals are overrun, and the nurses are showing up every day to work and working 12, 15, 18, 24-hour shifts, just, you know, in abysmal conditions, obviously. And, you know, lo and behold, that was forgotten about. Shocking by these hospital systems. So 15,000 nurses are on strike in New York City right now.
Wow.
15,000. And you know what the issue is? It's not pay. Although I think pay is in the mix, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's staffing levels.
Right.
And working conditions. That they're working too many hours. And they're not enough nurses. And therefore, they can't give the patients adequate care.
Right.
And so the nurses are like, look, we need more bodies. You know, if you want to have a successful, you know, a hospital system, and you want the patients, if you actually have the patient's best interest at heart, then you need to staff this, you know, correctly.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you know, once again, it's all about the bottom line. And these hospitals like, oh, we don't have the money and we can't, you know, afford to give, you know, to hire more people. Like, I'm pretty sure Mount Sinai in New York has the money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think these hospital networks and the insurance companies, et cetera, they have all the money in the world.
Right.
Just spend it.
Yeah.
Right?
The only hospitals hurting are the rural hospitals that had all their Medicaid funding.
That's right. That's
them.
Exactly
but
right. But it's not the city of New York.
Big city hospitals are doing quite well.
Now, here's the rub, all right? And our good friend Pete McNamara sent me this article this morning on my way in. Not that I was actually reading my phone while I was driving. There are scabs. They're scab nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that? Like, you're a scab nurse?
Pretty low.
And once again, if I'm a patient, I don't want to be taken care of by the scabbed nurse that was brought in from out of state that has no clue who I am, what my medical history is. A rented nurse? Yeah.
Here's some pills. Eat them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Get better.
Yeah.
Get better.
All in your head.
But guess how much the scab nurses are getting paid?
Probably
$9,000 a week. $9,000 a week. They're paying for their travel, their hotels, their lodging, salaries, blah, blah, blah. So they can't afford to pay the regular nurses, and they can't afford to hire nurses, but they're getting scab nurses at $9,000.
That
is just, for me, that is mind-boggling. Yeah. Mind-boggling. Shame on you, hospital systems.
You know something? It's actually really common in hospitals, though. If you've ever heard of the term travel nurses?
There's a lot of travel nurses.
They're everywhere, and hospitals basically say, we can't find enough qualified nurses, so we need to bring in nurses from other communities, and they make more money. So the idea is maybe like, if you paid all your nurses what you pay these travel nurses, perhaps more people would come to work there.
Right. Absolutely. And they wouldn't need travel nurses. The industry wouldn't need to exist if you had enough staffing.
Yeah. Well, right.
Right? And so there's travel nurses, but are these like traveling scab nurses?
That's what I'm wondering, yeah.
It's like, what kind of travel nurses are going to take another nurse's job?
There's plenty of other cities they could go travel to.
I think that's
right. Aren't on strike.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
And I want to throw in also, in the news last week, I don't think we got to it on the show, but Northwestern Memorial Hospital here in Streeterville is looking to expand its ER and ICU. Mm-hmm. And SEIU represents some of the healthcare workers at that hospital. And they are calling for staffing changes. They're saying these places are currently totally understaffed.
Right.
And so before you talk about expanding, we want to sit down and talk about staffing. And to this point, the hospital is just kind of, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about terms and conditions of employment with you.
Right.
Even though we have to by law. So
the staffing thing is very common, though. And it kind of flies in the face of, I think, a common misperception that people think unions only want more money. Union employees are only pushing for more money. Where repeatedly in the healthcare sector, we see that they're pushing for staffing.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Look, if it makes sense. If you went into nursing, right? You're not going into nursing to get rich.
No.
There are not a lot of rich nurses out there.
But what an important job it is.
Right? But you're going in because you care. Yeah. And so you care about the patients. And if you see that the staffing isn't correct, you're obviously going to say something to the point where these nurses are not only saying something, they're walking on a strike over this.
Yeah.
Right? That's a big deal. I'll tell you another thing that bothered me, though. And you can read this, look it up. The company, one of the companies or one of the hospital networks, put something out and said something to the effect of, you know, the nurses are bullying people. They're threatening people. You know, those big, tough nurses out there are bullying other nurses into
leg breakers.
Yeah. But 23% of the nurses crossed the picket line and went back to work. Hmm. And that is very, very troublesome because if you have 20%+ of people going back to work and now you're you're substituting blank number of travel nurses, et cetera. Well, all of a sudden, you know, that
you're losing leverage.
You're losing leverage, right? And who are you, nurses, that are going to cross your own picket line and go back to work? That was shocking to me, that number. Like when we have a strike in the building trades, you don't see that one guy up there on the tower crane going, mm-hmm. I'm still working, everybody.
Right.
You won't see him very long if he is. Yeah.
Our customers need electricity, so I'm going to stay.
Yeah. We don't,
how noble.
Surprisingly, I thought there would be more unionized nurses.
There's not.
In Chicago.
There's not.
Is it University of Chicago or nurses are the only ones? Or
I forget.
And the county health systems and things like that are organized.
Phil, you're 100% right. Yeah. I always thought nurses were like hospitals.
For such a strong union town.
Nurse dense, and it's not.
Right.
And I've been in hospitals like some of the religious hospitals, I guess, maybe have an exemption.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing. But I've been in other hospitals like, are you guys union? No, we're not union. Like, how come? Like, oh, we don't need that union in here. And it was shocking. Yeah. I'm like, whoa, holy cow. And then, I didn't want to badmouth them because they were about to take care of me.
Yeah, they gotta take care of you. Right. Oh, we love you. You're great. My sister works for Rush, and she says that every time there's a union increase, they get another bonus.
Of course.
The rising tide.
Keep them away, right? Yeah. So,
All right, listen, we got to wrap it up. So we're going to come back and we're going to talk with Butch, right?
Yes.
Butch Sikora. From the Carpenters.
Our assistant safety director.
About the I guess it's an epidemic, right, of suicides and drug addiction and things like that in the trades, and try and shine some light on it, get some clarity, and see what we can do together as a movement to move forward and see if we can fix this problem. All right, so we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Workers' Mic. More show to come, sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. So, we're happy today to have Butch Sikora with us from the Carpenters. Butch, you are the Assistant Safety Director for the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council, right, which is ever expanding.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for coming in. And let's just get to the topic. And it's like you said, Phil, I mean, it was a sobering topic, but I think one that's important, obviously, that needs to be addressed. We all agree with that. So explain what the safety department does.
Yeah, so, you know, we most of the time, you know, there's three of us, Eljo Tadas and Jared Walton, in different areas because we cover Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, and now, as of last week, Iowa and Nebraska.
Yeah. Ever expanding.
So, for now.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so for now, right. And we're a resource. We want to be a resource for the companies and resource for our members and everything else. And we go out, you know, we go to job sites, we check on our members, we talk to the members. Same thing with the contractors and everything else. I mean, we're there for both. Mm-hmm. My number one is the members.
Of course.
You know, I spent a lot of time in the field. Mm-hmm. I know how it goes. I know how hard it is. And, you know, that's how I got into safety, is for that reason.
So you go from job site to job site?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And then he tells me, well, he scolds me when I try to post pictures on Facebook that have safety violations. So.
I don't think he's wrong.
That's a good point. It's a good point, Phil.
He's my first line of defense. Well, him and Al.
Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. So, Phil, you talked on Wednesday, Worker Wednesday, about an article that was in the New York Times, which was really, I mean, it was just mind-bending to me. And I knew there was an issue. For some reason, I felt like, oh, things are getting better or whatever, but it's not.
And, no.
And so, explain.
Oh, yeah, there's an article about, I believe he was a painter out in Massachusetts, and they just told a story about how this young man committed suicide, and then they just did a larger dive into the construction industry as a whole, and the problem of suicide that seems to plague it. And the construction industry has the second highest percentage of suicide, the rate that is, only behind the mining industry.
Wow.
There are every year 5,000 construction workers die from suicide, and then another 16,000 die from drug overdoses, which sometimes can be correlated. So that's something.
And then compare that to actual, like, jobs, like death.
It's more than double. It's more than double the rate.
There's like 1,000 deaths per year in construction nationwide.
Right.
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 And I would venture to say that the bulk of those are not union.
Yep.
Right. Because we tend to operate safer.
Correct.
But
we have people like Butch who make sure of that.
Yeah, well, I'm serious. Like, we've gone through apprentice, and we're safety conscious, right? Mm-hmm. But the amount of suicides is sobering.
Yes.
And so explain to me, just in plain English to listeners, like, what do you do on a job site? Like, how do you deal with this? Because obviously it is part of safety, right?
Exactly. And you're 10 times more likely to die of suicide than any other job site related incident. That to me is just crazy. When I saw those statistics, it's crazy because we always think about the safety part of it. We're always looking at falls, which is always number one. We're always looking at all this stuff, but we never look at the mental health aspect. You know, we're supposed to be tough. We're supposed to be, we're all tattooed and, everything else.
Too tough to talk.
Right. You're supposed to leave your feelings at the gate. You're supposed to you know, tough skin or thick skin and everything else. And
stoic.
And now, I mean, and as a whole, you know, the Carpenters Union as a whole, we're changing that. We're changing that with our instructors. We're changing that with how we train our foremen. We're changing that when we talk to our apprentices. We're changing the whole stigma because it is a serious, you know, epidemic.
Yeah.
They're getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Know? We lost from the Carpenters Union, 20 years old, who was who ended his life on Christmas Eve, left behind a 2-year-old daughter. Just tragic.
You know, in the article, the New York Times article, it said that there were a number of factors that contribute towards member suicide and depression and things like that in the trades. Irregular hours, you're up before the sun, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of times you're working by yourself.
Access to guns, they talked about.
Access to guns.
Frequent minor injuries, things like that.
Yeah, and then so, you know, then you get injured, and then, of course, you throw in the mix of drugs, because we have a high incidence of drug use, unfortunately, in the building trades, because we get hurt.
Right.
And then these docs, of course, will go like, you know, the pill mills, like, here you go, here's some Oxycontin
for you. Get back to work.
Yeah, back to work. And so then they get addicted, right?
Yeah, well, definitely. And the bad part is, you know, like you said, it's so easy. And the reason why, you know, pills, you know, and opioids are big is you start with one, then you go to two, then you go to four, then you go to six, and then you go to, you know what I mean? So now it's out of control. And then you run out. So then you're looking for something else and that sort of thing.
And they keep coming out with stronger pain meds. Instead of, like, take two Vicodin, it's like, we've got something that's twice as strong as Oxycontin. People aren't equipped. Our bodies are not equipped to say no to this.
No.
As crazy as that sounds, it's completely true.
Because it works. You know? But it gets out of hand.
What are you guys doing to resolve it? I know you said that you're trying to bring awareness to it, and obviously that's why you're here today. It's good to see articles written about it, like in the New York Times, right? That's a pretty big voice, and shining a light on it.
Right.
But, you know, as well as I do, as we go around the country with the coalition, I'd say within the first 15 minutes of meeting a group, a union, they say, what do you guys do for mental health? What do you do for, you know, an EAP? Is there a way to scale that across the country? And unfortunately, the answer is no, right? We have not figured it out. So it's union by union, right? The operators in Ohio is a great example. Ohio has some resources by the state, so they divvied up the state amongst business agents and then made that business agent the liaison and said, hey, there's a problem, here it is, and I can now guide you towards blank, right? But every state doesn't have that. We don't have that here in Illinois. So it's up to the union to take care of our own members, right? So how are you guys doing that?
I can speak just a little bit about, you know, we have a benefit funds office, like a lot of most trades unions have.
Yep.
And they have services that are provided to our members through a third party where they have access to 24/7 counseling. They get, you know, it's available to them once a month to take advantage of. Obviously, and Butch could speak more about this, I mean, you direct people who are struggling to suicide hotlines, you know, 988. And then we have another thing that we really try to steer members towards is on the website, which is carpenterbenefits.org. There's a whole section called Tools for Life where it's members giving testimonials about about the struggles they've gone through, whether it was depression, whether it was suicidal thoughts, whether it was addiction. And so they can see that, you know, their fellow brothers and sisters out in the field, like, they've gone through this, and you know, it helps erase the stigma.
Yeah.
And I mean, the way to do it is just keep talking about it and destigmatize it, you know. And we obviously, there's a ton of room for growth there because it is, as Butch, and you guys all can attest to the room of, like, it's a hard thing to talk about in the trades, but the more you bring it up, the more, you know, do opportunities like this with Butch, I think, and the more it helps.
And everybody recognizes that it's a problem. I mean, as Ken said, everybody's asking, you know, what works? What can we get into that's helpful? So people see that this is an issue, and the harder the people are working to fix this, hopefully the better this is going to be.
I think, though, having, you know, the Butches of the world in labor,
right?
And I don't see why you can't, like you said, Butch, you start training the trainers, right? What to look out for. I see signs of this, right? Hey, let's have a toolbox talk, you know, before the day starts. Like, how you all feeling, blah, blah, blah. Because, look, at the end of the day, the last person I want to be working next to is somebody that's high on drugs or that's depressed and not paying attention to actually what's going on in the job because they have so much stress going on in their life, et cetera. Like, you know, you got to fix some of that stuff. In Premise Health, we have behavioral health. We have a psychologist right there in, you know, in the office. So there are the resources, but getting the members to use the resources is tough.
Yes.
Right?
And I think it's always good to, for members to hear from someone like Butch, who's comes from the field. You know, it's a lot different than when you hear a provider who's at an office and they're like, what do you know what I'm going through? Butch, you know, he's seen it every day. He knows what these guys are living. He knows the struggles they go through. And so when they hear from him when he's on a safety walk,
right,
safety visit,
yep,
I think it's more impactful.
And as a safety department, you know, we do a lot of toolbox talks. And we do a lot of pre-outage talks. And we always try to bring that up, too. We talk about mental health and the resources. And that's one of our main things. And you know, like Phil said, you know, I've been there. I've lived it. I've went through it myself. So talk about signs and seeing and noticing. That's the hardest thing to do because the people that you think or don't think are depressed are the ones that are depressed.
Right.
You know, Robin Williams committed suicide, yeah, the funniest guy on earth.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of, you know, Belushi and them, they were drugs, but they were also depressed when you watched their stuff.
They were self-medicating.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the guy that's always having a good time. I'm the guy that's always trying to make everyone laugh or check on people, and I went through it myself. I tried to commit suicide, and I failed, going back to the opioids and stuff. And, you know, so I took a bunch of pills, and because of depression and winter and you're out of work and you don't know where to turn, you think you're a problem. And you're going to solve the problem. You think that's the way to go. Mm-hmm. And I used to be that guy, like, oh, that's a coward's way out. But when your mental health, you're not thinking that far ahead. You're
sure
thinking of solving the problem right now.
Right.
You know? So, you know, I wake up the next morning mad because, well, I didn't succeed. I failed again. That's what I thought to myself, you know? And then I was out of drugs.
Oh, boy.
You know? So now it's like,
that's the perfect storm.
Yeah. So now what
yeah
do I do?
Yeah.
You know, now I can't even cope with what I
usually
cope with.
How'd you get help? Did you check yourself
my
into
wife.
It? Okay.
My wife, thank God, you know, yeah, she called a doctor for me.
Yeah.
Made an appointment. And she said, you know, I made an appointment. I'm going to be there. I hope you show up.
Ah, interesting.
And I did.
Good.
You know, and thank good God for that. And I made her promise that it'll never happen again. But it's still a struggle. You know, there's always times that comes up and, you know, that it's hard.
Yeah.
Life is hard.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's, you know, and
life is hard. It's not like we're going to an office every day and have coworkers around us and we're having lunch together and we're going to go to so-and-so's christening or, you know, a party or this, that, and the other thing. It's relatively lonely, especially yeah, like, you know, you're in a pipeline chasing and work, you know, for 2 months in the dark. I mean, that's yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, yeah, it's
right?
It's so taxing on the body. Yeah.
So let me, there's another number that we have, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Read that, Phil.
Yeah, the 800 number is 800-273-8255. And that's another suicide hotline that the Associated General Contractors push members to. It's another free availability to anyone. But this is, you know, just another resource. In addition to 988, there's help out there, and people just need to know that it's okay to
yeah,
take advantage of it.
For sure.
You know, no one's too strong.
But that's the thing. You don't understand it, or you always think you're alone.
Right.
Until someone talks to you about their story, about
sure,
what
right,
they went through. And that's why, you know, I brought up today, there's not, you know, not like seven people know my story. But if it helps, that's all that matters to me.
Right, agreed. Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing it.
So, yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah. I will say this as well. You know, we throw out our number all the time, and I'm going to say it again, 800-433-2099. That is the number of the coalition. We get calls about everything. If you have a problem, you're depressed, you have a drug issue, whatever the case may be, and you don't know where to turn, you pick up the phone, call, and we will get you to the right person. We'll take care of it. So there's another resource, and we're happy to do it. Right. And I think, you know, kudos to the Carpenters for meeting this head on. I think it's been in the shadows for way too long, obviously.
Right.
But we're starting to see this sort of come out now. Right.
Yeah,
but the good news is, if you want to end on a positive, that there is help out there.
Yep.
Right. That the unions are starting to realize that this is an issue and have been, you know, talking about it. And if you got a problem, you know, call your union, call your business agent, call us, call 988, that 800 number that you just gave. There are a ton of resources out there. Just pick up the phone and use it because things get better, right?
Absolutely.
You know,
our web pages.
Oh, yeah. What's your
carpentersafety.org is one.
Okay, perfect.
They have links and stuff to everything.
Yeah. You don't even have to be a carpenter, by the way. Just get on the website. It doesn't matter.
It's on the front page. What do we always say? It's okay not to be okay.
Yeah, that's right. All right, listen, we got to take a break. Butch, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story and for the work that you're doing out there for the brothers and sisters. I know that they appreciate it. We'll be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Ken Edwards. Are you clapping for me?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. So we did that conversation with Butch about mental health. We could have talked for twice as long about that.
No question about it.
Something struck me as he was talking. That is, when you hear a story about somebody taking their own life, you always hear folks say, "If I had known that they were struggling, I would have tried to help," or "I wish I knew. I wish there was something I could have done." My takeaway from it is, ask people how they're doing. Talk to people. If you're having a bad day, tell other people about it, because every little thing that you do can take the stigma away and maybe really help somebody and make a difference.
So. Yeah, I agree with that. Look, it doesn't have to be so formal, right?
Right.
Like, I don't have to call the mental health hotline every 5 minutes, but like just talking to a buddy at work, like, how's your day
going? You seem a little off today. Yeah. Well, everything all right?
Yeah, yes. Exactly right. Yeah, that's a good point, Ed. And I think, look, once again, you got you guys out there doing it, Phil, the carpenters, mm-hmm. right? We have, building trades out there doing it. We have mental health, consortiums, EAPs. I mean, there's all this stuff out there. But at the end of the day, I think some of the best medicine is peer-to-peer.
For sure.
Right?
Totally.
Like, hey, brother, I went through what you're going through. You're going through a divorce? Yeah, it is rough.
No shame in it.
It's dark. I mean, you can say, like, look, my mom says this all the time, right? The good times don't last forever, but neither do the bad times.
Yep.
And so you're going to come out of this okay. I can't tell you, Phil and Ed, how many times, and you probably have the same thing, but like when I have the coalition phone, which is all the time because Ed doesn't take it ever.
True story.
That's a bad
story.
Yeah.
But I get so many calls, unfortunately, for divorce, right? Looking for a divorce attorney or whatever. And, we shoot the breeze about it. But a lot of times guys are in a dark place. Like, they're not letting me see my kids. I can't get into the house. She said I blah, 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 blah. And I have to say, like, listen, A, you're going to get past it. B, don't do anything stupid.
Yeah.
Right? Like, some of that kind of stuff. And so, all these stressors in life, take away from, some of the joy, quite frankly. But, also, like, it's tough to do your job when you're like, you slept in my car last night because she threw me out of the house or, that kind of stuff. So, anyway. But listen, we want to end with what we're going to talk about, Ed.
Microsoft
data
so
centers, yeah.
So check this out, right? And this is like, are we building our own demise, right? We're hey everybody, let's build robots,
yeah, that and teach them how to fight.
Teach that's coming.
Teach them how to run
there's
equipment.
Already been a model for it.
Yeah, teach them how to run equipment.
Robot Wars, right?
Yeah. So but what'd you say, Phil, that Meta has...
Meta has committed $600 billion, that's with a B, listeners, in U.S. infrastructure spending by 2028 and locked in 20-year nuclear power agreements for its data centers. So that's going to be $600 billion they're spending on these data centers across the country.
And that's jobs. And
that's
construction.
That's jobs, man.
And that's a ton of it, yeah. Right? The issue, of course, being is that they take up a ton of power.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So communities now are going, wait a second, we might not want this in our backyard because our rates are going to raise.
Right.
And the fix, it's a very simple fix. They're starting to realize it, that if you want to build these things, you, the company, the Metas, the Microsofts, the, whoever it is, are going to have to invest in infrastructure,
yeah.
Meaning you're going to need to build more power.
Yeah.
And what does that do for us?
Utilities.
Good for us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Good for the worker bees. Good for people that run them. Create more jobs. And here's where I differ with the administration. Invest in solar. Invest in nuclear. Invest in wind.
Everything.
Just
all the above.
All of the above, right? China's got us crushed on that.
We want
crushed
a diverse on portfolio.
That. Yes, we can't rely solely on, you know,
fossil fuels.
Fossil fuels. It just is what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to be a coal plant that they're powering a $600 billion worth of data centers.
Well, Microsoft, I think it was, bought. They're restarting the Three Mile Island reactor, and they have already purchased all of the electricity that it will ever put out.
Are you serious?
Yeah, nukes are sort of needed for whole thing.
Wait
to
a
happen.
Sec, hold on a second. Robots and nukes. What could go wrong?
We're
you know
back,
what?
Baby.
We're just speeding it up.
Yes. Three Mile Island.
We're going somewhere. We're going to get there quick.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah,
how do you like that?
Microsoft is doing this whole community first plan for their AI infrastructure, where they're going to try to bring back lower water rates, and they're going to lower the utility rates for the homeowners and make sure that they're not offset by their building. So we'll see.
First of all, they should be forced to do it.
Yeah.
Right? End of discussion. They should be forced to do it. And while they're forcing them to do that, force them to pay their freaking taxes, you know?
Yeah.
Pay your fair share of taxes.
Because most importantly.
If they paid their fair share of taxes, we would have no debt and everybody could quit their jobs. You know, something like that. I don't know.
100%.
Anyway, but more to come on that. More to come on lots of things. Ed, good luck tonight.
Yeah, go Bears.
Stay warm.
I'm going to. Probably won't.
It's going to be awesome when Ed comes in with like two less fingers.
That would be fun.
Frostbite. All right, listen. We'll be back next week with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.